So we're on Daf Lamed Omid Aleph on the bottom of the Amud. I'm going to count up from the bottom two lines plus one word, Omar. Okay. Amalahu Rav Huna. Now the Gemara records a discussion between Rav Huna and a group of Jews that are called Avankari. Now that's a very heavy Aramaic word. It probably comes from a Greek origin. Who are these Avankari? What are they? So if you take a look at Rashi, which is about, I would say, approximately eight lines up from the bottom of the page, Rashi says Tagre. Okay, Tagre, which are Tagarim, I guess you'd call them retail people. They used to buy and sell. So Rashi says these were the Tagarim who would buy small items. He calls them Kelim Ktanim, and they would buy needles, Machtim, Masrekos, certain types of combs, Lulavim. They were in the lulav business. You and I know a lot of people in the lulav business, right? So these were the avankari. These were the sellers. They were in charge of providing the Jewish people with a dalad minim. And they got an instruction from Rav Huna. Now we have to understand the following. These avankari, these sellers, were the middlemen between non-Jews and the Jews. In other words, these were Jewish people who were buying the dalad minim from non-Jews. So the original seller is the non-Jew. And then after they purchased it, they would sell it on to the Jewish people. And Rav Huna instructs them the following. Kizavintu, when you make this purchase... Now, Zvini is a purchase, is a mecher in Hebrew, and Zvintu is a conjugation of the word Zvina in a verb form. So again, Zvina with an aleph at the end would be a sale, and Zvinta would be to do the sale. In other words, what were they doing? They were buying dalad minim in order to sell them to Jews. Okay then? So far so good? So what did Rav Huna tell them? He said to them the following. That when you're going to purchase these hadasim, let's say, that are growing in the fields of non-Jews, and then you're going to pass it on and sell it to the Jews... Now, asa, the word asa here, Rashi identifies asa as hadasim. Okay, the truth is that this could apply to aravos as well, but the word asa means hadasim. This you'll find in Rashi about five lines up from the bottom of the page. Kishetiknu hadas min hanochrim. When you, the Jewish retailers, purchase the hadasim from the non-Jewish sellers, lagod bahen lahoshana. Now, Rabbi say the word hoshana means different things to different people. Meaning, for me, I would have said the word hoshana is what we call an arava. But Rashi uses the word hoshana in a different context. Hoshana is the agad that's made up of three of the four minim. It has the lulav in the middle, and it's got the hadasim on the right, and the aravos on the left. That whole package is called hoshana. And the word lagod means to bind them together. So the purpose here of the retailers was to purchase hadasim from the non-Jewish sellers, and then to do the agad, which would mean to bind them together with a lulav and with aravos and sell them on the market to the Jewish people. Presumably, if it was a good financial operation, they would make a profit on the deal. So that doesn't bother Rav Huna. But what bothers Rav Huna is the following. Keys of Vintu, when you purchase asa, when you purchase hadasim, asa is actually in the singular, a hadas. When you purchase a hadas from an akum, from a goy, Lotigzizu ason. Ason means you. In Hebrew it would be atem, and in Aramaic it's ason. Now the word tigzizu comes from the shorash of the word what? Right, gozes. Right, gozes is one of the 39 malachas on Shabbos, and it means to shear something, to cut something down, to detach it from its growth. And Rav Huna insists that these avankari should not personally themselves cut down the hadasim that are growing in the fields. So presumably, who owns these fields?
Non-Jews.
The non-Jews. Okay, now there are two possibilities here. Either the non-Jew who's selling to the Jew, to the avankari, he himself, the non-Jew, will call him Christopher, okay? I think that's one name that hasn't yet... I don't know, I'm not sure. But anyway, so we'll call him Christopher. So Christopher could cut down these hadasim. That's called gziza or giza. And then hand them over to the Jewish purchases. The other possibility is that the Jew himself can do the actual maisa giza, and he could cut down the hadasim. Now you and I would have said, what difference does it make? Who does the gziza? Why is Rav Huna making a whole to-do about who does the Giza, and he insists that what? Lo tigzizu aton. You yourselves should not do the actual cutting it down. Let the guy do the cutting it down. Now, he's not trying to save the Jew that extra effort of having to take a sickle and cut down the hadasim. Rashi says the following, Ligzizu inhu. Haim, meaning the non-Jewish owners who are selling you the hadasim, haim, they, yachtechu, they'll cut it down min hamechubar, from the attached growth, v'yitnu lachem, and they'll give it over to you. Do we know why? We don't know why. Not yet, okay? So that's going to be the gemara of my time. Ela ligzizu inhu, inhu means they, let them cut down the hadasim, v'yavulichu. As Rashi said before, v'yitnu lachem, they'll give it to you. My timer. So what's this whole exercise about? You shouldn't cut it down yourselves, Rabbi, but you should let Christopher cut it down. My timer. Stam ovdei kochavim gazlinu aratoninhu. Now, I'm going to interpret this the way I think Rashi interprets it. And it's a little bit of a change from the literal translation of the Gemara. Because stam means that it gives you the impression that this is a general rule that knows no exception. You know, stam we have to assume. But Rashi says differently, and the Meiri expands on this, that stam ovei kochavim means, as a general rule, we have to be worried and concerned about the following possibility. Gazlinei arata ninu. Arata is what?
Land.
Is land, excellent. Ara is land. And gazlinei means they stole the land. Okay, so apparently it was very common back in the day that the goyim would steal land. Because, as my father told me about his town back in Lithuania, which would be if my father was alive, he'd be 105, so we're going back like a century ago, and my father said that unless you protected yourself over there from the goy, it was hefker. Hefker means the goy could do whatever he wanted. There was less din v'las dayan. I mean... So in any event, the goyim obviously were capable, because they were very powerful, of taking away absconding or taking over Jewish land, and that land is now stolen land that was stolen from the Jews. And in a paradoxical situation, now this Yid, who's the avankari, he's sort of righting the wrong, you know, going full swing, full circle, and he's going to get back these hadasim that originally belonged to a Jew. Again, we don't know if we know who the Jew is, if we can identify him, because if we could, then maybe, just maybe, this Yid, who's the avankari, has to return these hadasim to its rightful owner, under the law of Hashavas HaGzeil, to return stolen goods. I don't know. But be that as it may, let's assume to make life easier for ourselves, that we don't know exactly who the original owner of this field was. We cannot identify him. So we can't return the stolen goods to a person if we can't identify him. Okay. So let's look at Rashi. Rashi says, "My taima." This is the last Rashi on Daf Lamed Omer Aleph. Stam akum gazlene arata mi Yisrael minhu. Notice that Rashi adds one word to the text of the Gemara that we don't have.
Maybe
he had a different girsa. For sure, he had a different girsa. My only question is why our printed Gemara doesn't have. Usually, our printed Gemara has Rashi's girsa. But Rashi says that the guy we have to assume, or at least take into consideration the possibility that this land that the guy is sitting on was stolen from a Jew, v'shema osa karka miYisrael havi, which is a little bit strange because Rashi has the gears of Yisrael. I don't know why he has to say maybe this land belonged to Yisrael. So maybe Rashi didn't have the gears of Yisrael. I don't know. It's not clear to me. Now, let's just think before we turn to Daf Lamed Omid Beis, which we're about to do. Let's think about the repercussions here. A guy steals land from a Jew, and there are hadassim growing in the land. Now, if these hadassim are going to be sold to a Jew, then we have two issues that we have to analyze. One issue is in stolen property. The Torah says, "Ulekachtem lachem." It's got to be yours, mishal lachem. And the first issue that we have to analyze here is: can the Jewish buyer who purchases from the avankari, right, the Jewish middleman, can he acquire ownership over these hadassim, and therefore circumvent the problem of lachem, of it not being yours? So that's issue number one that we have to address. Can you establish ownership over these hadassim, which really belong to some unidentified Jew who was the victim of theft? The second issue that we have to address is what? Mitzvah abab avera. Because if this is stolen goods, the Mishnah says that a lulav hagazel is disqualified for 7 days. If it was only a problem of the absence of ownership, that would be a problem on which day? Only on Yom Rishon. L'kachem lachem b'yom harishon, the Torah says. So the first day requires ownership. The second day, I could borrow your dalet minim, and even though I don't own them, I could fulfill my mitzvah, because the Torah doesn't say lachem. But if it's a lulav hagazel in such a way that the psul is mitzvah baba vera, that psul, the Gemara establishes, applies all 7 days. So I say this on behalf of my friend Yehuda, who's in Mitzpeh Yericho, because he wasn't here yesterday. So I'm reviewing something that you weren't here. Phil also wasn't here. He's not far from you. He was in Malei Adumim. You guys could have met halfway in between.
In what account?
And what we have to know from yesterday, Phil and Yehuda, is that mitzvah abab avera means that you cannot combine a mitzvah with an avera. That disqualifies the object that has an avera in it for all 7 days. So again, if we're going to analyze the question of a stolen lulav from the perspective of ownership, that's only relevant to the first day of Sukkot. If we're going to analyze the psul of lulav hagazel from the perspective of mitzvah baba vera, then we have to be careful all 7 days, because when the Mishnah says that lulav hagazel is possible, the Mishnah is talking about mitzvah baba vera, and therefore lo pasuk uketani, as the Gemara says. Pasuk uketani means the loshna yontif rishon, loshna yontif sheni, that for all 7 days a lulav hagazel is possible because of the principle called mitzvah abba avera.
Rabbi, what if you want to throw out the mitzvah abba avera idea like the Gemara does?
Well, throw it out, meaning put it in the back, on the back burners for the time being?
Well, I'm just saying that didn't we just see yesterday that, you know, the Gemara may really only just be talking about Yom Rishon, and therefore mitzvah abba avera isn't really what they're talking about when they're concerned about gazel, and it's really
correct. So if we're focused on the first day of Yom Tov, then we can analyze Rav Huna and his instruction to the Avankari from the perspective of Lachem. If, on the other hand, we're worried about a lulav hagazul, or in this case, a hadas hagazul, from the perspective of mitzvah bob avera, then Rav Huna is worried about all 7 days. So right now, we don't know. But what we're going to have to do is we're going to have to cover all our bases. Because we're going to have to somehow circumvent the problem of lachem and establish that the purchaser will have acquired ownership, kidasu kidin, legally over these hadasim, because otherwise he can't be yotze even on the first day. And number two, we're going to have to somehow solve the problem of mitzvah bob avera, because that too would pass the lulav, not only for the first day, but for all 7 days. So at this juncture, as we're about to turn to Daf Lamed Amud Beis, we have to differentiate between two categories of possessions. One is called karka. In English, I guess you call it real estate. And the other is called what? Metaltalim. Right? Did I spell that right? Metaltalim. Yeah. So metaltalim are movable objects. Now, when we speak about a stolen object, and we want to know whether or not you could acquire ownership on something that is stolen, then we have to differentiate between karka and metaltalin. And this is the principle which is called karka eina nigzelis. Okay? Now this is a fascinating principle, and it's a halachic principle. I don't think it has its parallel in other legal systems, to the best of my knowledge. And in this itself, even in the halachic world, is a subject of great controversy. Our sugya, initially at least, is going to assume karka ain't an excellus, which means you can't steal karka. Very strange idea. What does that mean, you can't steal karka? Okay, I can certainly throw you out of your karka, so why can't I steal it? The Gemara later on is going to quote a Shita Rabbi Eliezer. He holds a karka nigzelis, that you can't steal karka. So we're going according to the Chachamim Shita, this whole sugya right now, and we're holding the karka ain't an nigzelis. Now, if karka ain't an nigzelis, which again we have to understand why, but we're not up to that yet. Right now we'll accept it as gzeiras hakasuv, as a divine decree that karka cannot be stolen. Does that work in favor of us or against us? Meaning, assuming this karka belonged to a Jew, and now Christopher is selling hadasim from this karka, is it a good thing for the Jews who are buying these hadasim, that karka ain't an excellus, or is it a bad thing?
It's a good thing.
Should be okay for them.
It's a bad thing. Why is it a bad thing? Because it still belongs to the original owner. Why? Because the karka was not stolen. Unless we can convert the hadasim into metaltalin. What action will convert the karka into metaltalin? The gziza, right? The cutting it down. Are you with me? So we can discuss the status. You know, look at these hadasim that are growing in the stolen karka, and we can ask ourselves, well, what's the status of the hadasim before you cut them down? And the answer is, since they're mechuba lekarka and they're growing from the ground, they have the status of karka.
And they still belong to the Jew.
And they still belong to the Jew whose karka was stolen. However,
even if they grew after it was stolen, I take away the Jew's land, and then I plant all the hadassim.
Right.
Twenty years later, there is
something called nishtaka shmo, but that's something else. But even 100 years later, if this karka cannot be stolen, then anything that grows on the karka belongs to its owner. And that would be good if we found the owner and he wants to fulfill his mitzvah of hadas, but he's out of the picture. We don't know who he is. We can't identify him. So now somebody is purchasing these stolen hadasim. Well, as long as hadasim are still growing in the karka, and they have a status therefore of karka, because anything growing from the karka is called karka, if we activate the principle of karka ain't an exelus, then the original owner, the nigzal, we'll call him, is still the owner of the hadasim. There's no way that I can acquire ownership on the hadasim if I want to buy them through this amankari, through the agency of this retailer. But now we have a critical moment. What's the critical moment? Gziza, when we cut it down. when we cut down the hadasim, they're no longer growing in the ground. They now have the status of metaltolin, and everybody agrees that you could steal metaltolin. I don't mean you could steal it, meaning legally, but if you stole metaltolin, you could acquire ownership on these metaltolin. We'll have to see exactly how and through what method, but now they're subject to king. Oh. Now, what Rav Huna is going to insist on is that there's a fundamental difference between two possibilities. Possibility number one, if the guy would cut down the hadassim, and possibility number two, if the avankari, the Jewish retailer, would cut down the hadassim. Why should it make any difference? So let's turn now to Daf Lamed Amid Beis.
Can I just ask you a question? We said mitzvah bab the aveira you also brought up.
Okay.
It's the aveira of the goy. What do I care?
Okay, wait. Let's go slowly, Menachem. So again, yeah, we're going to get to, you know, as we said before, Richard said, let's put mitzvah bab aveira on the back burners. Again, we're not even halfway there, because even if we solve the problem of lochem and we somehow achieve our goal that the purchaser could acquire ownership over the hadassim, we still have another problem of mitzvah bab aveira. So I want to leave that for a moment. Let's first solve problem number one of lochem. And he says the following: v'karka einan igzelis. So Rashi says, what does that mean? Karka einan igzelis. Klomar, this means the following: eina knuya lanigzal. I'm sorry, eina knuya lagazlan. There's no way that the gazlan could acquire ownership over stolen karka. Not only that, says Rashi, even if the nigzal, the owner of this piece of real estate, gives up all hope, you know, he was stolen by the mafia, he doesn't hold out any faith or optimism in getting back his karka, Bishum Yesh, even with Yesh, the Nigzal could make a statement in front of 100 witnesses, I give up hope, there's no way I'm going to get back my real estate, it's stolen, it's gone, that's it. That would not change it one iota. Duli Olam, forever and ever, Bechezkas Ba'alehi, it is in the possession of its owner. And Rashi says, why is that so? And Rashi says, for that you have to learn a drasha in Bava Kama Daf Kuf Yud Zayin, the Mikroi Nafkalon Ba Gozel Basra, at the end of Masechta Bava Kama. There you'll find Mikroi. What does Mikroi mean? From a pasuk, from Psukim. Nafkalon, we derive it. So we have a derivation from Psukim, B'nizokin, that in the sugi of Nizokin, the Gemara establishes based on a drasha that karka ain't in exels liolam, even liachar yesh, it remains in the possession of whom? Of the bailin, of the original owner. Aval, says Rashi, misha nitlash hapri, once we detach the fruits from the ground, then it becomes what? Metaltalin havi gezel. Then it becomes stolen. Now you and I might have said, well, if it becomes stolen, that's not something I want to be happy about. But yes, in this context, I do want to be happy about it, because if the act of tlisha, of taking it out of the ground, generates gzela, then we can have what? Yeah. We can have a kinyan, and yesh could be chal. And now you can own the hadasim and take it out of the possession, the ownership of the original bialim. So in a certain sense, we're very happy. We're applauding the fact that there's gezel here. We're all standing up and we're clapping. We're happy that there's gezel. That's the paradox
here.
It's
still stolen.
If it's stolen, then here's the paradox. What opens up in front of us is a golden opportunity. Why? What golden opportunity becomes feasible now? Kinyan, acquisition by someone else. Do you hear the paradox? As long as there's no gzela, then it's impossible for anyone to acquire ownership on something. It still belongs, li'olam, Rashi says, for all posterity, it belongs to the bialim, to the original owner. That's a problem for us, because then no one else can be yotzei the mitzvah of lekatim lachem, because the Torah requires ownership. paradoxically, if we can call this Gezel, then that would solve the problem, or at least potentially, of Lachem, because once it's stolen, now you can effectuate what? A Kinyan. Kinyan can be Chal, in which somebody could acquire something if it's stolen. Again, this is all counterintuitive, because we're used to thinking that if you call something stolen, then what it means is that you can't acquire ownership of it. And that might be true in the secular world, but not in the halachic universe. Because in the halachic universe, once you call something stolen, you're 90% of the way towards acquiring ownership on it. Now, by the way, if the Gazlan acquires ownership on it, does it mean he's off the hook?
No, he's supposed to pay.
He'll have to pay cash, but he can keep the object because it becomes his. So the halacha works in a very strange way. You know, we have to get used to this. It's so foreign to us.
Is it his until he's before he's paid the cash, or it just
the moment he makes a kinyan? Again, we have to know what that kinyan is. One possibility might be the yeush itself is the kinyan. The other possibility would say, no, I need what's called shinui rishus, and he's got to pass it on to someone else. Another possibility is shinui hashem, where he has to make a change in the object itself. Whatever it is, a whole world of possibilities now open up in front of our eyes for the Gazlan to acquire ownership on it. But only if it's Gazul, Karka ain't an exilus. So up until the moment that he cuts down the Hadassim, there's not even a Havamina that we could possibly consider that the Gazlan could acquire ownership of it. Why? Because it's not stolen. Why? Because karka ain't an exilus. You can't steal karka. Wherever the karka is, it belongs to its owner. Metaltulin you can take and remove from someone's domain. But you can't remove a domain itself. The karka is called a domain. The karka is a rishus. And anything that's in a rishus cannot be stolen, because wherever it is on the face of the earth, if I own property in Japan, that property is mine. And it goes very far. Again, I don't want to get off on a tangent, but if a bird would fly and land on my property in Japan, and that bird is hefker, I can acquire ownership if I have, again, you have to know complicated dinim called chatzir, if I have to chatzir mishtameres, if I have a fence around it. So imagine if a bird falls down into my real estate in Japan, I'm here in Jerusalem, and somebody comes along and he pokes into my field and he pokes the bird. He might be stealing my bird. I don't even know about it. The bird fell into my because that's called my domain. That's my rishus, and no one could steal that rishus. You know, it could physically be located on the field. He might even close the field and lock it up on all sides. It doesn't matter. The field itself, according to this opinion, cannot be stolen. In other words, at this point, there's not even a Havamina that the Gazlan could acquire ownership over this field, because it can't be stolen. If he can't acquire ownership over the field, then he cannot acquire ownership over the Hadassim, because these are stolen Hadassim growing in the field. They belong to whom? To the owner of the field. What's going to change that situation? Cutting it down. Cutting it down converts it into what? Metaltulin. Once it's metaltulin, it could be stolen. That sounds like bad news, but it's good news. Why? Because once it's stolen, now you can make a kinyan on it. Again, what that kinyan will be, we don't know. Would it be Yeush? Would it be Shini Hashem? Shini Rishus? There are so many, many possibilities they have to be out of filled.
As the end user, why would I even want it to have anything to do with this? I mean, if I needed a dasim for the mitzvah, why would I even want to get involved in this whole situation? It seems like that...
Because it could be possible that once the middleman steals the hadassim, and why does he steal the hadassim? Because by cutting it down, they become what? Metaltalin. Then, at that point, there's no longer a chiyuv hashava on this object. Meaning, the Hadassim themselves do not have to be returned to the original owner. Even if I can locate the original owner, and two witnesses would testify the fact that he owned the karka, and he was thrown out by this guy, I would still not have to return the Hadassim, if the Gazlan made a kinyan on the Hadassim. Now, who has to pay back the original owner if we could identify him? That's the headache of the first guy. You know, Enochinami, we have to know whether or not he has to pay back, but that's only in cash. He doesn't have to return the Hadassim. So the original owner is totally out of the picture here. Okay. So now Rashi says, we have to go on to problem number two. We've solved problem number one, and the object is stolen as what? As metaltolin, the very moment that it's cut down. But now we have a different problem. So Rashi says that we have another problem. What is that? Hilkach. The three lines down from the top, at the end of the line, he says, Hilkach, ligzizua hein. Let's make sure that it's the guy, Christopher, he himself cuts down the hadassim, min amachubar, from its attachment, v'yitnu alachem, and then he'll deliver it to you, the avankari, sheyu heim hagazlanim, who now is guilty of the act of gzela? The guy, because he cuts it down. Do you follow? Now again, keep in mind, as far as Hilchas Kinyanim is concerned, it makes absolutely no difference whether the Yid would cut down the Hadassim, the Avankari, or whether the guy cuts down, Christopher, the owner of the field, the Gazlan, right? In Hilchas Kinyanim, the very moment it gets cut down, it becomes metaltolin, and now it's subject to Kinyanim. So in Hilchas Kinyanim, if we go to problem number one, namely Glochem, it makes no bit of a difference, not an iota of a difference, as to whether or not Christopher cuts down the Hadassim or the Avankari cuts down the Hadassim. Is that crystal clear? Because again, all we need now is a transition between what and what? Karka and Metaltolin. Once that transition is effectuated, now what opens up, a vista that opens up in front of our eyes, is Kinyanim. Once there's a Kinyanim possible, again, we'll see exactly which Kinyan is gonna come to the fore here, then there's no problem of Lachem. So why does Rav Huna insist that the guy cut it down? Now we get to problem number two, Menachem. Which problem, Menachem? Mitzvah Bob Avera. Is there an Avera here? If the guy cuts it down, that's his headache. I don't know if that's an Avera or not an Avera, you have to know. Again, I don't want to get into that right now. But at least the Jew is not guilty of an Avera. Says Rashi, Hilkach, Ligzizua Hain, on the fourth line from the top, Min HaMechuba, let them cut it down. V'yitnu alachem, they'll deliver it to you. Sheyu, please underline these three words. Sheyu heina gazlanim. Who is the gazlan here? Again, as far as the cheftz is concerned, the hadassim themselves, it makes no difference one way or the other, because if this guy's the gazlan, that guy's the gazlan, that's irrelevant. Once this gzela and the hadassim are stolen, they can now be acquired and you can acquire ownership on it. So what difference does it make who actually is the gazlan? That's already on a different track. That has to do not with lachem and ownership, but rather with mitzvah avir. Vatem, you the avankari, lochim osa mehem, you'll purchase them, meaning the adasim, from the goyim, and then we'll solve the problem of kinyan. Why? Because now it's already metaltolin, it's no longer karka. Habailim nisyashu kvar mikola peros, the owner has no hope to get back his fruits. Again, whether you need a declaration on his part, or we can assume, based on the circumstances, that he would give up hope. And therefore, once his yeush, achar kach hu mishtana mirshusam lishuschem, now, once there's yeush, there's a possibility of kinyan, and it would transfer ownership from the guy over to the Jew. Meaning the Jew here is the avankari in the middle. Okay, now you and I might say, why do we have to wait until we transfer ownership? Meaning, what are the avankari doing with these hadassim? Are they keeping it for themselves?
No, they're selling them.
They're selling them. Once they're selling them, that's called shinui rishus. So I have to write that on the blackboard. I'm a little bit lazy right now. Does anybody want to write that for me on their paper so I don't have to write it on the blackboard? Shinui Rishus, that's Shin Yud Nun Vav Yud. Rishus is Reish Shin Vav Tav. So Rashi says we need Yeush and Shini Rishus. Vahavi Yeush Etzlam, the very moment that the guy cuts down the Hadassim, at that split second, there's Yeush, because now it's metaltalin, and once it's metaltalin, Yeush could be effective. Yeush can't be effective unless it's stolen. As long as it's attached, it's karka, the Yeush is meaningless. But the Yeush becomes meaningful the very split second it becomes metaltalin, meaning after the Gziza, and then the Avankari is holding on to stolen goods that have been subject to Yeush. We're only missing one piece of the puzzle, and that's called Shini Rishus. And therefore, the very moment Acher Kach Shu Mishtanim Rishusam Rishuschem, when he sells it to you, what did you call that, Phil? The end consumer? What was your phrase?
I said the end consumer.
Oh, end consumer. Okay, so I like that. The end consumer. He now has acquired ownership over the Hadassim. Because Savar and Rav Huna holds that Yeush greater, Yeush alone, Lokan. In other words, the Vankari themselves, they cannot use, let's say, if they wanted to use these Hadassim for their own personal use, if they weren't, sellers, retailers, then that would be a problem because there was no Shini Rishus at this point. In other words, the Yeush is effective the very moment that the Hadassim are cut down and they become a Taltalin. But now we need another step because Yeush Greda Lokani. Yeush itself, in and of itself, according to this opinion, later on we'll see another opinion, is not enough to clinch a Kinyan. So we still have a problem of Lachem until the Avankari pass it on to the end consumer. Once the Avankari pass on the Hadassim to the end consumer, now we have A plus B. We have Yeush plus Shini Rishus. Aval Yeush v'Shini Rishus. If you, number one, have Yeush in which the Nigzal despairs of giving up, of getting back his object. Number two, the object went from the Rishus of the first person into the Rishus of the second person, Kani. At that person, there's a complete Kinyan.
So you are saying that if the person, he sold a lot of the goods, but he kept one for himself, it'd be a problem with the one that he kept.
Correct, because at that point, if we're holding that Yeush greater lo Kani, at that moment in time, the Avankari himself, he left for himself one Hadas, he doesn't have ownership over that Hadas, because Yeush itself is not enough. He needs Shini Rishus.
Who cut it down?
Christopher.
The guy cut it down.
So once he cut it down, the Yeush sets it, when he sells it to the Avankari, then the Avankari needs Shini Rishus.
Okay. It seems that we need a two-step process that has to take place sequentially. In other words,
it could be that they're partners.
What I'm saying is something different. We need what we call time T1 and time T2 in a sequence. We need a time T1 that the Yeush take place, and then a time T2, there's got to be a Shini Rishus. The Shini Rishus can only take place after Yeush. They cannot take place simultaneously. It's got to be Bezech or Zeh. Okay, so accept that as an axiom for the time being. So what happens is that at the moment that it's cut down, now we have Yeush, right? And then we need Shini Rishus. But already he's paid for it. So if he's paid for it, there's no Shini Rishus.
So the Avankari couldn't buy the karka from Christopher?
No, because karka ain't in exelms. Yeah. Right?
So how do we buy transfer land
from a gun? How do we buy land from a gun?
Or do you just have to establish true ownership?
Just 1 second. How do you buy land from a guy if karka ain't an exelms? That's an excellent question. I don't know the answer to that question. But let's try to finish up the Rashi. Aval Yeush v'shini Rishus Kani. Okay, so we're going to have Yeush the moment that it's cut down. And then when the Avankari passes it on to the consumer, at that point we have also Shini Rishus, and now the consumer could acquire ownership through Yeush and Shini Rishus. V'inami Kani. Okay, even though Rashi says he made a kinyan on it, so everything looks fine, correct? But Rashi says we still have to insist, and that was Rav Huna's instruction, that it's the guy who cuts down the hadassim. Why? Because even if the Jew would cut down hadassim and then sell it to the end consumer, and that would effectuate both Yeush and Shini Rishus, we have another problem, says Rashi. And what's that? Mitzvah habav havera havi. Im atem, if you, the avankari, tachtechua min hamechubar, if you'll cut it down, then tiyu atem gozlim, you will be the thieves. And then you will be guilty of the act of gzela, because the act of gzela really takes place when the hadassim are cut down. As long as they're growing, there's no possibility of gzela. But the moment you cut it down and it becomes metaltalin, now it's subject to gzela. If the Jew himself would do the act of cutting it down, that's an act of gzela, and therefore the aver of gzela was implemented here by the Jew. And once there's an act of gzela, and the avera of lo sigzal have been violated, this hadas becomes posel b'din hadas gozel.
Right, what if the Jew cut it down, sold it to another Jew who was a merchant, and then he sold it to someone else? Doesn't that, we then effectuate the two steps that you need? The second Jew who buys it, the merchant Jew, wouldn't be a gozlin, right, because he's just bought metaltalin. And so why do we actually need Christmas?
So that's going to be a gigantic controversy as to whether or not Mitzvah Baba Vera applies to not only the person who completes the gzela by purchasing stolen goods, but even down the line, you know, for the olam vayed.
That's for
my second shir, for the 11.5 shir. That's a gigantic machlokas as to whether or not Mitzvah Baba Vera applies only within the context of the original avera, or the object becomes posel and disqualified all the way down the line, forever and forever, even for other people.
Doesn't matter if it's a Jew or a non-Jew, though, because we have the same case is the same. I'm just saying, so replace Christopher with a Jew. Why does it change?
So the question is the following: Is the guy himself capable of setting up a psul of mitzvah bav avera by doing the gzela?
Right.
And the answer is no. Uh-huh. Okay, at this point, only a Jew can effectuate a psul of mitzvah bav avera, not a guy. And that's the hinge here on which Rav Huna is standing. Rav Huna is saying that we cannot allow the guy to do the gzela. I'm sorry, we cannot allow the Jew to do the gzela because that would make it into mitzvah bav avera. But we can allow the guy to do the gzela. Okay? So, yeah, David, you want to say something? I think we have to read a few more lines to get the picture.
This whole thing very difficult. If I buy stolen goods from somebody, surely it's not a mitzvah.
And you want to use those stolen goods for a mitzvah, let's say.
No,
let's say.
I'm saying it's not a mitzvah. So, if I buy stolen goods, and I don't know what the category of a avera is, but it surely is an avera.
Right, that's the bottom line. That was why I had the question before. The bottom line is that you can't know. You have to know that that land originally.
But again, it's only an avera. Right now, we're assuming that it's only an avera up to a certain point, and that point is when you still have to return the object. Then the avera is still extant. But when the point comes beyond that, and you no longer have to return the object, that's called kinyan. Then at that point, mitzvah bav avera falls off. So what we're trying to do is we're trying to set up a situation where we can circumvent the problem of mitzvah bav avera. How do we circumvent the problem of mitzvah bav avera? The Gemara thinks that the only way of doing that, that's Rav Huna, is to have the guy do the gzela. Once the guy does the gzela, then what opens up in front of our eyes is the possibility of effectuating a kinyan. And if that kinyan is chal, then we solve the problem of lachem. We solve the problem of mitzvah bav avera because it was the guy who cut it down and he was in charge of the gzela, not the Yisrael. And therefore we've solved two problems. So Rav Huna says the following. Let the guy cut it down. If the Jew himself, the avankari, would cut it down, then what problem do we have? We have a problem of, first of all, kinyan. That problem could be solved, says Rashi, once he passes it on to the consumer, because then you have both Yeush and Shini Rishus. However, you might have a problem of mitzvah baba vera. Oh. So let's see the Gemara's question now. The Gemara says the following. Hilkach l'gzazua inhu, let the guy cut it down. Kihechi, at that point, we achieve the following goal. The lehevu, it becomes yeush bailim. The yeush is chal biyadaihu didhu, in the hands, biyadaihu means in the hands, didhu of them. Them referring to the guy. Okay, so fine. Now you have yeush. But you still have another problem, because Rashi says that this sugya maintains that yeish greater lokani, and if it's not lochem, but vishina yirushus biyadaihu, yadaihu is the end consumer. In other words, the avankari now sells it to the end consumer, and that achieves a shini rishus. And if that achieves a shini rishus, now the end consumer can acquire ownership. It became guzzle. It became guzzle at the point of cutting it down, because it became metaltal, and now it's subject to gzela. Now we need two factors in order to effectuate a kinyan once it's already stolen, and that is yeush plus shini rishus. We can have the yeush that takes place the very moment that the guy cuts it down. We can have shini rishus the moment that the avankri sells it to the end consumer. So now we've solved all our problems.
Why do you say Daihu is the Balaam? Why do you say it's the Avankari? What's forcing you to say that it's not the Avankari?
You think that the word Biyadaihu means the Avankari?
Yeah, it's plural.
But it says Biyadaihu didhu. Didhu means of them.
The Avankari, yeah. You have two people.
No, but again, Rav Huna is addressing the Avankari, and he says to it, let there be Yeush Bailim Biyadaihu Didhu of them. So he can't be referring to the Avankari themselves, because he's talking in third person. Correct? So the word Didhu would have to...
Shinu Shinu Shus Biyadaihu is the Avankari.
Yeah, because biyadaihu is in second person,
right,
as opposed to didhu. Didhu is in third person. So the yeish bailim takes place biyadaihu didhu in their hands. That's the goy.
Right.
And shini rishus is biyadaihu.
That's the avankari.
Correct.
In their hands when they set it to the goy.
You were saying that.
Oh, okay. So
the people sell it to them. They don't have to sell it.
Oh, okay. They don't have to sell it. So that's going to be the Gemara's next kasha. Okay. So the Gemara says the following. Sof sof, ki gazazu avankari, lehevi yeush bailin biyadaihu. Right, the yeush will take place the very second that the guy cuts it down. Vishinu rishus biyadan. Meaning in the hands of the avankari. Why did the avankari have to sell it in order to effectuate shini rishus? There's already a shini rishus the very moment that the avankari acquire ownership by purchasing these hadasim that were cut down by the goyim. So once the hadasim were cut down by the goyim, we've already achieved what?
Yeush.
And if we've already achieved yeush, then in order for the kinyan to be complete, we need number two, shini rishus. And then the shini rishus should occur in the hands of the avankari themselves. Let me just read to you the Hebrew translation here, just to make sure that we're right. Kishanu lokhe me avankari hareza mishum shini rishus v'yeyu shini rishus v'adikona. Just 1 second. So here we have to read Rashi. Rashi says, Be a dun. Do you have that, Rashi?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Be a dun. Vishina Rishus be a dun. Didan. Halochin osan mehen. Ulididan lav mitzvah haba baverahi. Just one second. It sounds like the Gemara is asking.
What?
Just give me a minute, I'm sorry. The Gemara is asking, Rashi says about mitzvah haba bavera. And the Gemara is saying that there is no mitzvah haba bavera here. So in other words, the Gemara is saying that what? Oh, the Gemara is saying the following. That l'chora we could solve both problems of kinyan and lachem and of mitzvah baba vera even if the Jew would cut down the hadas.
Yeah, that's what Mitch asked. Yeah. So the Gemara is asking the same question.
Yeah, so let me go through the logic of it. So what is Mitch's question? I call it the Gemara's question, but it's the same. I know. I don't mean to steal the credit from you, Mitch. So the Gemara is asking the following. First of all, when the Jew buys it, so there was Yeish at the moment of Gzela, and now Shina Rishus when the Jew purchases it. So again, who did the Gzela is irrelevant. Correct, as far as Lachem is concerned. Why? Because we have both Yeush and Shini Rishus. So Yeush and Shini Rishus takes the original owner, whoever he is, on the face of the earth, out of the picture, and now the end purchaser can acquire ownership, because we have both Yeush and Shini Rishus. Oh. Now you're telling me, but if the Yavankari would cut it down, we have a problem of what? Of mitzvah baba vera, says the Gemara, there's no problem with mitzvah baba vera. Now, how do I know that the Gemara is saying that? I only know that from Rashi, because Rashi says be adon, and therefore Rashi says lav mitzvah baba verahi. In other words, even if the Jew is guilty of an avera because he cut down the hadasim, that in no way would have an impact on the purchaser. Because the purchaser didn't violate Gzela. Aye, but it's already Guzel. And it was Guzel by a Jew. So the Avera was done. But the answer is, as we said before, Mitzvah Baba Avera only applies as long as there's still a Chiyuv Hashava. When I have to return this object. And then it still retains its status as Guzel. The status of the object as Guzel expresses itself in the fact that it has to be returned. But once we effectuate the kinyan, i.e. we have both Yeush and Shinui Rishus, the object doesn't have to be returned. And if the object doesn't have to be returned, it's no longer considered Guzel. And if Paka Shem Guzel, if we've removed the Shem Guzel, it's no longer Mitzvah Baba Vera. Now again, if the act of Shini Rishus would be the Mitzvah act itself, then you'd have a problem with Mitzvah Baba Vera. Because then, at the very moment of the mitzvah, you've accomplished the avera. But here we're talking about a case where he's just buying the hadasim. It's a week before Yontif, and he's, or a day before Yontif, he's buying these hadasim. Now comes Yontif, he wants to be yotzei his mitzvah with the hadasim. Well, at that point I have to ask the following question. Is there a chiyuv hashava? So at the moment of the mitzvah, when you look at these hadasim and you ask yourself, is there an obligation to return these hadasim? That's going to determine whether it's mitzvah baba ver and it's possible or not. If the answer is yes, at this moment that I do the mitzvah, I have to return this object because it's stolen. That would make it into what? Mitzvah baba vera. But if at the moment that I'm doing the mitzvah, I no longer have to return the object, it means the Shini Rishus was effectuated, was completed before I do the mitzvah, then there's no Chiyuv Hashava, and it's not Guzel at the time of doing the mitzvah. There's no psul of mitzvah baba vera. So the Gemara says that we have to go back to the drawing board. What was Rav Huna telling the Avankari? Lo tzricha behoshana de Avankari gufayhu. That the Avankari themselves, Gufayu themselves, want to use this Hoshana for their own personal use. And that's what Rav Huna was nervous about. like you said before, David, you know, there are X number of hadassim, so some of them he's going to sell, and then there's no problem neither of kinyan, of lachem, nor of mitzvah b'aveir, but some of them he wants to use for himself, so he saves three for himself. And now Rav Huda says there's a problem. Why? Because who cut down these hadassim?
He did.
Oh, if he cuts down the hadassim, then he has a chiyuv hashava to return these hadassim, because his kinyan is effectuated at this particular moment. Let's read the Gemara inside. Lo tzricha bo shana davankere gufayhu. Rashi says, four lines up from the bottom of the page, be osam shem konim litzarkam lotzeis bo. So they are buying these hadassim litzarkam for their own self, and therefore, if they are implementing the act of gzela, then even though you can solve the problem of lachem, but you have a problem with mitzvah b'aveir, because they did the avera. So again, let's go over it one more time. If the avankari themselves cut down the hadassim, that would mean that the avankari is guilty of gzela. Once he's guilty of gzela, even if he acquires ownership of it, on it, he still has a problem of a psul of mitzvah b'aveir. Why? Because how did he set up this mitzvah that he's about to achieve? Through the aveir of gzela. The aveir of gzela made it possible for him to fulfill this mitzvah. And that's called mitzvah b'aveir. If he would sell it to someone else, and they want to do the mitzvah with that object, that's not a problem. Why? Because they were not guilty of the gzela, and they were kona b'yeyush v'shini rishus. So what's the Gemara's next kasha? What time is it? We have a few minutes. I don't want to keep you over time, but let's see if we can fit in the Gemara's next kasha. The Gemara says, v'liknua b'shinui maaseh. So Rashi says, what's shinui maaseh? In other words, we're no longer talking about shinui rishus, we're talking about shinui maaseh. So what I told you is wrong. I apologize. I said to you before that the Gemara is operating with the psul of mitzvah b'aveira. That can't be so, because then I don't understand the next kash of the Gemara. The Gemara is looking for a kinyan. If the Gemara is looking for a kinyan now, which is called shinui maaseh, we'll see exactly what that kinyan is, then obviously the Gemara is not addressing the problem of what? Of mitzvah b'aveira, because an alternative kinyan is not going to solve the problem of mitzvah b'aveira. So apparently, when the Gemara asked this kasha of shini rishus b'yadon, the Gemara was trying to solve the problem of kinyan, and the Gemara says lo tzricha bo shata davankari gufayu. And if it's avankari gufayu, then that's not called shini rishus. And that goes back, Mitch, to the point that I made before, that shini rishus has to be separate, independent of the gzela and the yeush that follows the gzela. So there has to be gzela plus yeush, and then shini rishus. So the Gemara says that if the avankari themselves want to use these hadassim, there's a problem of lachem. Why is there a problem lachem? And then we have to answer the other question, why is there no problem mitzvah b'aveira? Because I convinced myself that there was a problem mitzvah b'aveira, now I have to unconvince myself. But first let's address the issue of kinyan. Why is there a problem of kinyan here? So the Gemara says, because there's no shini rishus. Why? I mean, every time you steal something, the shini rishus. So every gazlan should be kona b'yeush by virtue of shini rishus. The answer is that the shini rishus has to take place after the gzela plus yeush. So the two shlavim, shlav aleph is going to be yeush, is going to be gzela plus yeush, and shlav bet is when the gazlan passes it on to someone else. Now that the Avankri themselves want to use the Hadassim, they haven't passed it on to anyone else. So there's Yeish, but without what? Without Shini Rishus. So the Gemara says, if that be the case, then the Avankri have a serious problem if they want to use these Hadassim for themselves. Oh, but wait a second. But if the Guy himself will cut down the Hadassim, then it became already Guzzle, and it was Yeush in the hands of whom?
Of the guy.
Now, when the Avankri purchase it, we have not only Yeush, but we also have Shini Rishus. So the Gemara says now it all depends on the following. If the Avankri sells it to someone else, to another Jew, the end consumer, then you have Yeush plus Shini Rishus. And the consumer now could be yotze the mitzvah because it's lachem. If, on the other hand, the Avankri themselves want to use this lulav, so then, unless the guy, let's see, if the guy had cut it down, then there's yeush in the hands of the guy. Now the guy sells it to the Jew, and that's called shini rishus. The Jew, the Avankri, but if the guy does not cut it down, but rather the Jew himself cuts it down, that's the ma'isik zela. And if that's the ma'isik zela, then he hasn't made a kinyan yet. Why? Because that ma'isik zela is only zela plus yeush, but there's no shini rishus. And now the Gemara must be holding that if we can effectuate the kinyan, and therefore there's no longer a chiyuv hashava, we can also solve the second problem, namely what? Mitzvah baba avera. So the Gemara now asks, okay, so there was no shini rishus. If the Gazlan himself, if the Avankri themselves cut down the hadasim, effectuating a maisik zela, then they can't acquire ownership through shini rishus until they pass it on to someone else, the end consumer. So the Gemara says, but I have another kinyan that they could use. Dalmiyaki, in other words, close the door on shini rishus. I have a substitute called shini masa. What's shini masa? So Rashi says, what's shini masa? Sha'agad shloshes haminim yachad. When he purchases the hadassim and he connects them to the lulavim and to the lulav and the hadassim. I'm sorry, the aravos, is that's called agad, and agad is called a shinui masa, and that itself is a kinyan. Meaning, if I change the object in a very substantial way, that's just as good as passing it on to someone else. And once there was a gzela, b yeush, and three shinui masa, where you change the object, then there's an absolute kinyan on the object, and the Gazlan himself now could use the object for the mitzvah. That's the Gemara's kasha, meaning the Avankri themselves could use these hadasim for the mitzvah, even though they themselves cut down the hadasim. That's the Gemara's question. So when they cut down the hadasim, at that moment it becomes gzela plus yeush. There's no shini rishus, but the shini masa, the very moment that they bind the hadasim together with the other minin. The shini maisa, nami kani, even shini maisa is enough for a kinyan. So shini maisa now can slip into the shoes and replace shini rishus. So the Gemara says, Kasavar lulav ein tzarech agad. Now, I don't know what the Gemara means here. Either the Gemara means that he didn't bind it together, because we paskin, according to one man, the Yomar, that lulav doesn't need an agad. Or the Gemara means that even if he went ahead and he binds the three together, nevertheless, it's not necessary. And since it's not necessary, then on a legal level, that's not called shinui masa. Because shinui masa has to effectuate a dramatic, profound change in the object. So if the object was not royal mitzvah, so you couldn't use it for the mitzvah because lulav tzarech agad, then the agad makes a profound change in the object, and therefore it's called shini masa. But if on the other hand I hold lulav ein tzarech agad, then nothing changed as far as these hadasim in their suitability for the mitzvah, and therefore it's not considered a radical change in the status of the hadasim through this aga. The aga was unnecessary. So even if he binds it together, physically it's bound together, but nevertheless that's not called a shinu because he didn't need to bind it together. But the imtim tzalomer, what about The man Diomar who holds lulav tzarech agad, this is a sugya later on, Rabbi Yehuda holds that lulav requires agad, and you cannot fulfill your mitzvah without agad. So the Gemara says, shinu yachozel libriyosohu, v'shinu yachozel libriyosoh lav shmei shinu. Shinui has to be an irreversible change in the object. Here, it's reversible. You bound it up, and now you unbind it. So it's not a permanent change. So when does shinui masa qualify as a kinyan? That's only if that shinui, that change in the object, was permanent, irreversible. But if it's only a temporary change, because you haven't physically changed the object. So let's say, for example, if Reuven stole Shimon's garment and he dyed it, D-Y-E, and he changed the color of it, assuming he can't reverse that, that would be a shinui masa. But if on the other hand he would, let's say he would put on it, you know, some sort of a covering that could be removed, so right now there's a little bit of a color on it, that's not called shinui masa. So here's where we're up to. V'likninu v'shinui Hashem, that's where we want to pick it up in Mirtz Hashem tomorrow. The Gemara now has a substitute kinyan. We've tried Yeush, it didn't work because Yeush greater lokani. We tried Shini Rishus, and that would help us only for the end consumer. It's not going to help us for the Avanker. Then we tried Shinui Hashem because he binds it up. Right, and binding it up is only considered a mice if you hold Lulav Tzarech Agad, and therefore, if you hold Lulav Tzarech Agad, we have a Shini Maisa. The Gemara says no, because Shini Maisa is only Eino Chosel Lebrios, so you can't reverse it. But if you can reverse it and it's not permanent, that's not Shini Maisa. Now the Gemara is going to say, but I have another Shinui, and that's called Shini Hashem, and that's for tomorrow. So B'li Neda, tomorrow we'll finish up on Daf Lamed Omid Beis, and we'll pick it up on Daf Lamed Aleph Omid Aleph. Wow. Okay. Now you and I may think we got away easy here because there are only 10 lines on this daf, but wow, this is a tough one. So anybody who wants to stick around, we'll go through the Gemara again and plow through it one more time to make sure that we have it, and that'll be an informal part of our discussion. And then I have to decide what to talk about at 11:45. Okay, then.